Father, I'm just going to ask you, as we look at your word, would you affect our lives? Thanks. Now I'm going to just share for a few moments on the life of Joseph. And I know that there's a lot of people that you're in very different stages of life, different ages here, some young, some in high school, some just leaving high school, some much older. But I hope that this morning you will take a hold of something out of what I'm going to say, whether this is going to prepare you or whether it's going to help answer some of your questions. How do we deal with disappointment? How do we deal with disappointment? You know, I was reading through the life of Joseph, as most of us probably were the end of this week. I tell you what, there's one thing I'm seeing again as I read through the scriptures, that God doesn't depend on circumstances. And his character, his nature, is not defined by what we go through. His character is unchanging. And as you read through this, there's heaps of passages in the Bible, heaps of stories that you're just going, what? Is anyone else finding that, or is it just me? Like, I read passages and I'm going, okay, I don't get that. I don't get why that's in the Bible. I don't understand why it would happen the way it happened. I don't understand God's blessing of a cheat, a deceiver. I don't get the whole thing of Judah and his thinking he's sleeping with a shrine prostitute and ends up to be, you know, his own family. And you know, I'm reading this going, wow, the Bible. Really? And I still come away from it going, God, I trust your character. But I get to Joseph and I'm reading this story and I'm like, wow, this is a lesson in handling disappointment. Here we have a young man. And we sort of encounter him at about 17. We know of his birth, but we discover at about 17 that he has become the object of his father's favoritism. And he's probably a kid that is, he's been raised in a pretty dysfunctional home. You know Jacob's history, and he's a cheater and a deceiver, and he's got quite a, you know, track record behind him. And, you know, there's been infighting in the family between, you know, wives and concubines, and there's this whole thing of children by different mothers. And, you know, Joseph literally grows up with a mother and three stepmothers in the same home. And all these siblings that it turns out actually hate him. It's not just sibling rivalry. Joseph comes to this place of elevation in Jacob's eyes. And not only does, you know, he get the bigger portions at the dinner table and he's got the, you know, tent flap with the best view of the desert and he's got, you know, everything he needs. He's got this coat that his dad sort of gives him. It's this beautiful ornamented coat that he struts around in. And embroidered on the back is these big letters, Dad's Favorite. I think. That's kind of what you get. But then in this age in his life, he obviously begins to get God's attention. And he starts having these dreams. Now, Joseph at this age, I don't think has a lot of wisdom. Because he has this dream and he says to his brothers, "Hey guys, come in. I got this dream. I got a story I want to tell you." And they're like, "Okay, we don't like you very much already, but we'll listen." And he goes, "I had this dream, okay? We were out farming and, you know, there were all these sheaves of grain and I was there with you." Now, that's weird in itself. Do you realize how weird this dream is? It seems to me Joseph has never done a day of work in his life. When his brothers are out herding, at 17, Joseph, by culture, should be right in the midst of the work, but he's not. He's sitting at home in his puffy jacket. But here's Joseph, and he goes, "Here's my dream. We were working." And they're like, "Yeah, that's a strange dream. All right, we were working together, but all of a sudden my sheaf of grain stood up taller than all of yours, and it was much bigger, and then all your sheaves of grain started bowing to it." Isn't that a cool dream? Now, that's not really wise. If you have a dream like that and your family already doesn't like you, just keep it to yourself. But he parades it. And it says they despise him. But then he has another dream. And these are God dreams, okay? He has this other dream and he says, this time he gets the whole family together. He says, "I had another dream. And this time, you know, we were all like stars. But all of a sudden, like your stars, you all started bowing down. And then the sun and the moon all bowed down to me." And even his dad steps up and he goes, "Okay, it's time to probably shut your mouth. Because you really think that like everyone's bowing to you, mum and dad included." But then it says, "But Jacob tucked this away in his heart." Jacob had somewhere learned the mystery of hearing God as well. And there was something about it that Jacob just went, "Strange as that sounds, I'm just going to put it away." Wise people do what Jacob did, do what Mary did in the New Testament, and ponder things in their hearts. You may not always be able to make sense of circumstances, but tuck it away. Because sometimes it's many years later and you'll get a aha kind of moment. Joseph's life becomes this ultimate roller coaster of highs and lows. I was down at Wet n Wild recently. And you can be in these high places. There's this ride there called the Aqua Loop. And you're standing there in this high tower, high place with all this anticipation, and all of a sudden the floor drops out. You drop into this dark, wet tube, get flipped upside down, not sure where you are, and come out the other end, wet and confused. Welcome to Joseph's life. He's in this place of position and, you know, he feels great about himself. All of a sudden the bottom drops out. He drops into this dark ride that's going to be confusing, and his is a lot longer and a lot darker. Let's go to some of this journey, and I'll do it quickly. He's highly favored by his father, but at the same time, highly favored by God. And God's eyes are towards him. And he gets this sense some things are starting to happen, but at the same time, this bitterness and this hatred is brewing against him. And when Jacob sends Joseph out to the fields to what? Check on the brothers. Let's hold that for a minute. When Joseph is sent out by his dad to check on the brothers' well-being, I think there's a little more going on. Because prior to this, Jacob's other sons have been messing up. And Joseph, whether it's integrity or, you know, just the little tattletale inside, tells Dad, "Dad, the boys are—they're doing wrong stuff, and you need to know about it." So when Joseph is sent out this time, I wonder if there's a part in Jacob's heart when he says, "Go, just find out how the boys are doing." It's, "Go find out how the boys are doing, and bring back a report to me." So Joseph begins this journey out to through Shechem and to Dothan and finds the boys eventually, but they see him coming. Why? Because his jewel-encrusted robe is glittering in the sun. And it's either an apparition or it's Dad's favorite. And as they watch him come in the glittering of his jacket, I think they just become more and more incensed against him. To the point that they just go, "Oh, we're sick of this. It's time for this boy to die." Wow, really? The brothers are that incensed, they say, "Let's kill him. And heck, why not let's desecrate that robe at the same time? Let's paint it in blood and take it back to Dad and go, 'Oh, look, Dad's favorite. No more.'" Man, evil enters into these boys' hearts. As soon as he gets there, they grab him. I don't know if you've ever walked into a situation that you suddenly go, "Something's not right here." I think Joseph walks into a situation and immediately, "Something's not right here." They grab him, they rip his jacket off him. And all of a sudden, there's one brother, Reuben, who says, "Hey, stop. Let's not get blood on our hands. Let's not kill him. Let's put him in a system." And it says that he's going to come back and rescue him. So he's got this little plan. There's one of these brothers who at least says, "I'll get him back to Dad. I hate him, but I can't do that to him." So he's in a system. And then Judah seems to have a second thought as well. And when Reuben's not there and there's some, you know, camels coming along with their traders, he says, "Look, let's just sell him. That way we benefit too." So all of a sudden Joseph goes from highly favored to being stripped of his jacket and thrown in a cistern. And Joseph is really left there to starve to death and to dehydrate to death because it says it's dry. So imagine sitting at the bottom of this cistern going, "Oh my goodness, what just happened to me?" I imagine he's yelling out, "Hey, guys, don't do this to me. Fellas, where are you?" And as he's yelling, all of a sudden, these brothers' heads pop over the top of the cistern. And you're looking up from the bottom of your hole, and all of a sudden, you see their silhouetted heads, and you're like, they've come to their senses. And they drop the rope into him. He's like, "I'm saved." And he starts to come back up again. But then all of a sudden, they're not here to save me, they're here to sell me. And now you're not only sold, but you're sold into slavery. And you're no longer even in your homeland. You haven't even had a chance to say, "See you later," to Dad or to Mum or the stepmums. And now he's on a camel train headed for Egypt. And he goes from the place of extreme favor to standing on a slavery block being sold. And everything that would have brought him comfort now is so far from him. But he's bought by a man named Potiphar. And Potiphar brings him into the home just as a slave. But all of a sudden, this favor that is on Joseph's life begins to show forward, and he becomes the one who rules the house. He's head of all the other servants. And Potiphar brings him to the place of entrusting him with everything that matters in his home. Except Potiphar's wife is there as well. And it says day after day after day, he is sexually harassed by probably a beautiful woman. Begs him, come to bed with me. Now, here he is, 17, 18, 19. Believe me, hormones alive. Reality. And here's this beautiful woman saying, come to bed with me. And he says, no, 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 no. Why? Because what you see him say is, how could I do this to the man who's given me charge of his whole house and has put everything under me except you? And besides that, how could I sin like this against God? I wish we had that fear of God. Because it's so easy when you're in this position of favor and everything is thrown at your feet to suddenly feel like, hey, I deserve this. This world has become my playground. When we're successful in business, this world, this money, this is my playground. And very quickly we begin to indulge and forget the fear of God. You know, as I was preparing this, my heart was brought to the point of tears, because I know so many that have been in this position and take whatever is at their fingertips as if it is theirs to have. And even in his righteousness, he is falsely accused. And when he thinks that everything's good and I have stood righteous and God's favor is on me, Potiphar's wife accuses him of rape, and he is imprisoned by the very man that he's given his life to serve. Favoritism to the bottom of a system, to thinking you've got brothers who actually care, to be sold into slavery, to rise to the head of a household, to be now dumped in the bowels of a prison where it says Pharaoh's prisoners are kept. And Pharaoh's prisoners are the ones that he wants locked up best, because they're a threat to him. This is a dark, lonely place. But all of a sudden, he starts to have favor in the prison, and he rises up amongst the ranks of the prisoners, and the prison guards start to say, wow, this guy has something. And he's given authority over the affairs of the prison, though he's still sleeping on the prison floor in chains. But at least it's favor, right? But this favor of God towards him continues to grow, and he now has this awareness of he has some wisdom. We don't know the journey to wisdom, but it seems like in every one of these places, God's eyes are never off Joseph. Two men there, a baker and a cupbearer. And they both have dreams, and they're stewing over them. What do these dreams mean? They were so vivid. The cupbearer says, you know, I had this dream, and I was squeezing grapes, and I'm cutting these short. And Joseph goes, man, good dream. In 3 days from now, Pharaoh's going to call you back, and you're going to be his cupbearer again. And the baker, who's had his dream, goes, that's good news. Hey, I had a dream too. Mine was that I had a basket of bread on my head and these birds came and started eating it. And what's the favorable interpretation of that dream? Am I going to be restored too? And Joseph goes, no, actually yours is in 3 days from now. Your head's going to be cut off and the birds are going to eat your flesh. He's a man of truth. Even when he had not a favorable thing to bring, he was a man of integrity. He bought it anyway. But it's interesting. He says to the cupbearer, hey, when you're restored to Pharaoh in 3 days, can you, like, chuck in a good one for me? Would you remember me? And you see him say, sure, I'll do that. But it says this in I don't know where, because I don't know where I'm at in my notes. But it literally says there, but the cupbearer didn't. He forgot him. He forgot him. Isn't that interesting that you can take what you want and then just forget someone? Here's a guy that told him about his restoration, about a dream, restores him, and he's forgotten for 2 years. Do you reckon Joseph is ever going, God, are you kidding me? Every time I see an out, it just sends me deeper. Every time I think there's favor, I end up at the bottom. God, are you joking? But after 2 years, he's pulled out because Pharaoh has a dream. And Joseph comes and interprets that dream, and all of that learning and all of that favor and all of that faithfulness to a father, to Potiphar, in the prison. Now Pharaoh stands, and in this training time of years and years and years, a roller coaster of highs and lows, of hope and despair, God has been shaping something. And you come to this place at the end of it where literally from age 17 to age 30, he's walked through darkness and trial. We see him given authority over all of Egypt, second only to Pharaoh himself. And then he's in this position that when, for need of feed, Jacob and his family sends the boys to Egypt, they're encountered by Joseph, although they don't know it. And Joseph, in all his power, now has the hand, the lives of the boys in his hands. And he's moved to forgiveness. And he's moved to mercy. I look at all that life and I go, what are the keys? And I'm going to give four as quickly as I can. Four keys that when you have a life where you're going, where the heck are you, God? In your journey of highs and lows, of hopes and despair, these are the ones that are going to carry you. And number one is this, fear of God. Fear of God. When we come to a place, and until we get a hold of the fear of God, we will be the managers of our own lives. We will be, if we do not understand the fear of God, at some point in life, we will become the great inquisitors of God, that we, as so many do along the way, demand God to account for what we find ourselves in the midst of. The Bible says that the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. The beginning. And Joseph seems to have an early fear of God in his desire for righteousness, but wisdom is very green in his life. And over his journey, wisdom begins to develop By the time he's in Pharaoh's court, his wisdom is recognizable to all. Wisdom is a growth chart. It's a continually finding, I don't have it, I need it. I don't have it, I need it. James chapter 1, if you lack it, ask for it. What that tells me is there's going to be a lack of wisdom in our lives. Proverbs 3, 5 and 6, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Don't just lean on your own understanding, but in all our ways acknowledge Him. And what? He will direct our paths. Fear of the Lord is the trust of God. The fear of the Lord is an awe of who He is, that no matter where I find myself, whether it be in a tent or in a cistern, in a desert or in a camel train, in a house or in a prison or in the courts of the Pharaoh, I trust Him because His character is sure. And what you see is this final statement in Genesis chapter 45. And then again in 50, where Joseph confidently says this when he sees his brothers. He says, come close to me, I'm your brother. Don't be distressed, don't be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. For 2 years now, we've had this famine, no plowing or reaping. Verse 7, but God sent me ahead of you to preserve you for a remnant on earth and to give your lives great deliverance. In chapter 50, Joseph says to his brothers again, don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? And that's a statement of the fear of God. Listen, I'm not a God. I'm not the one who really has you in my hand. Am I in the place of God? You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. So then don't be afraid. Now I'll provide for you and your children and be reassured. And he spoke kindly to them. A fear of the Lord that says, God, you were in this from the beginning. It was you who had me in my father's tent, and it's you who has walked with me for the whole journey. So many get off track along this way. And so many get undersold by what I call pop theology and pop doctrines that say it's all about blessing, it's all about favor, it's all about God's goodness to us, and we'll earn it. We just talked about it in the book of Job. It's wrong thinking. God walks with us in highs and lows, in the good and the bad, in the palace and in the prison. And it's so important to get that in our lives. I know so many that have said, I've been righteous, I deserve better, I've been good, and look where it's got me. So you know what? Forget it. They throw it off. My heart aches for people in that place where we question, where is God? God, where are you now? In your silence, in my pain, in my suffering, where are you? But we forget that God has said this, I will never leave you and I will never forsake you. People say, well, what about my dreams? What about my hopes? What about your promises? Billy Graham tells a story of a man that was building a cathedral. And a fellow who's watching is watching him chipping away this stone, and he's working on it on the ground, and he goes, what are you shaping that stone for? Why all the work on this stone? The cathedral's just about done. And he looks up at the top, and there's this gap right at the top of one of the towers. And he says, I'm shaping this down here so it's ready to go into place up there. And this guy who was struggling with what he was going through in life in that moment felt like he heard God speak to him. And he said, so much of what you go through down here is to prepare you for what lies ahead. The second thing, very quickly, sorry, is a forgiving nature. You see that Joseph just continually walks in forgiveness. and ultimately the forgiveness of his brothers. Thirdly, Joseph walks in strength of resolve, or he is focused and resolute. He stayed true through hatred in chapter 37, verse 4, envy in chapter 37, verse 11, in betrayal, 37, verse 19, in slavery, there's a whole section on that, in temptation with Potiphar's wife daily, chapter 39, 7 through 10, false accusation, chapter 39, 14, in imprisonment, 39, verse 20, in ingratitude, in chapter 40, verse 23, in abandonment when he's forgotten about, in Genesis 40, 23 again. And you see that he is focused, he's resolute in all of these situations, because why? First dealt with is the fear of God. He's dealt with forgiveness. And lastly, faithfulness. One thing about Joseph that you'll see, and I'm going to close with this, is he is faithful. He's faithful in his home. He's faithful in Potiphar's house. He's faithful in prison. He's faithful in the palace. He does not wait for the palace to become faithful. It's an earmark of his life. And the question to us is, what about us? On those four points, do we fear God? Or is God just a helper? Are we forgiving? Or do we hold offense because it's my right? If we're not forgiving, we have no fear of God. And that's why it must begin with a right fear and awe of who God is. But we must not hold offense. Thirdly, are we focused? Are we resolute? Are our eyes fixed on Jesus? It's not about what people think. It's not about the circumstances I'm in. I am resolute. I am focused. And lastly, are we faithful? These are decisions, fear of God, forgiveness, focused, faithful, that are going to shape your lives.